All right, well, I'd like to welcome my guest here today, Matthew Martinez, and I'm really excited for this interview with you, Matthew. You're the first person, first real estate investor that I've interviewed that has also published books. And in fact, you have a new book coming out. Did it already release or is it coming out shortly?
Yeah, it was just released, just published about 2 weeks ago.
Okay, published
so
2 weeks ago.
Beginning of the year.
Beginning of the year, excellent. So it's called How to Make Money in Real Estate in the New Economy. And I was doing a search on Amazon looking at books that are recently published or coming out and about real estate and investing. And this one really struck out to me because it was like, wow, we definitely are in a new economy and, you know, there things have changed. And so how can we make money in that economy? I thought was a really compelling title. So Matthew, maybe to get started, what I wanted to do is ask you kind of right out of the gate. So a lot of people are scared about real estate right now, but you're doing a lot of things in real estate. You've been doing things in real estate for quite a long time. Why aren't you scared?
Well, the reason why, and it's difficult to be a contrarian, and you know, for your audience, if you've never heard that word, a contrarian is someone who does something that other people aren't doing. You know, they're going against the grain. More money can be made as a contrarian than certainly can be made if you're following the herd. In fact, most people who follow the herd lose money, and most really savvy investors that have been investing for decades and built substantial net worth tend to be contrarian. So by that I mean when everyone is selling, you should be buying. When everyone is buying, you should be selling. And right now everyone's selling. And everyone's scared, and everyone feels as if the sky is falling, and this is absolutely the best time to be generating wealth, to be buying properties, to be creating your portfolio, or to be expanding your portfolio. And certainly the people that I know, the people who have been in business, been in the real estate business for the last 30, 40 years and have been successful and have weathered good markets and bad markets, they are all hands on deck looking for properties, in buying mode, because they know eventually the market will rebound and things will get better and the sky won't completely crater, and they can get really good properties at very reasonable cap rates and with a lot of upside.
Mm-hmm. So the essence of what you're saying is that because the masses are selling right now and they're afraid, that provides an opportunity for those people who say, you know, hey, obviously prices are probably lower at this point in time. Things are going to get better. Now would be the time to get into it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we probably haven't seen a market like this offering so many opportunities to acquire properties, investment, income-producing properties. We haven't seen a market like this in probably, you know, certainly since the RTC days. So that's going back, 20 years or so.
About 20 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So what are the types of deals that you're doing right now?
You know, our focus is primarily multifamily and retail. So we get involved with shopping centers and apartment buildings, and that's our main focus. We've got two farm areas in Boston for multifamily, and then retail in Southern Florida.
And you mentioned farm areas. I know in the book you published a book a couple years ago called Investing in Apartments. If I remember
correctly. Investing
correctly.
In apartment buildings. That's correct.
Yeah, investing in apartment buildings. And I mentioned to you in the pre-interview that I actually I was getting ready to do a 270-unit multifamily deal, and I went to Barnes & Noble to go see if there was a book that could give me some additional information on how to do this sort of thing. And I saw your book, and that's the one I picked out, and I read it. It was great, really helpful. In that book, I remember you mentioned farm areas. You mentioned farm areas in your new book, How to Make Money in Real Estate in the New Economy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by farm areas?
Yeah, and actually, so how to make money in real estate in the new economy, that's my third book. My first book was published about 7 years ago, and incredibly, it continues to sell probably a couple hundred copies a month. It's 2 years to a million in real estate. In all three of my books, I talk about farm areas. And any time I'm being interviewed by individuals like yourself or, you know, the more traditional media, I always take the opportunity to talk about farm errors because it's probably one of the most commonly asked questions I have from investors. Is should I go? I live in LA, and I see that there are some really good cap rate deals on income producing properties in Phoenix. Should I go there? Or I live in Chicago and I want to buy at 11% cap rate. That's my threshold. And I see there are deals in Houston. Should I go there? And farm areas are areas in which you know intimately well. It's where you work. It's where you play. It's where you call home. They're areas that, for some reason or another, you know what the difference is between Maine and Maine and Maine and Jefferson. You know the values of properties. You know what you can get in terms of rent, whether it's an apartment building or a shopping center or an office building or industrial property or a hotel or whatever it might be. You know what the good areas are. You know what the bad areas are. And the reason why I talk about it in all my books and I talk to the press about it is because not a lot of people talk about it. In fact, most books that I've read, a lot of books that I've read on the topic of real estate, say you should go after the best deals no matter where they are in the continental United States, and that's fine if you're a big private equity firm, and that's fine if you've got $100 million of properties under your belt and you can establish property management companies to manage your assets wherever you buy them, but it's not a good idea. It's definitely not a good idea if you're a small investor, you're a novice investor, you're a first-time investor, and you're planning to have any success in this business early on. If you're buying properties that you can't see and touch and feel and drive by on a regular basis, you can't be an ab. I think it's very difficult to be an absentee landlord and have success, especially in the early days. And so that's what I mean by farm area. It's farm areas where you can get to on a regular basis, you can see your properties, you can manage your properties, and more importantly, you know the areas inside and out, like the back of your hand. And I think that's very important, certainly in the early days, that you stick to a very specific farm area. And that might be your town, it might be your city, it might be a certain few blocks, whatever it is, it's the area that you know best.
And I, to add to that, as a buyer of properties here in Houston, where I am, I've seen so many properties that have been up for sale by people who are out-of-town owners who got into real estate. They saw, a couple of years ago, wow, Houston's a great place to invest, and they did it remotely. They didn't understand the local market. They didn't know if they were buying for the right price or not. They couldn't manage it very well because they were remote, and now these properties are coming up on the market as an opportunity for me as an investor. But unfortunately for the investor that purchased it earlier and it wasn't in their farm area, it didn't work out for them. I think in large part because it wasn't exactly what you're saying. It wasn't in their farm area. It wasn't something that they understood the local things about it.
Correct. Just having that knowledge of the differences between neighborhoods, the differences between streets, the market rental rates, the local economics, the business climate, what's going on in certain areas is so critical, and you really can't get that. And I have an example I share in the book. It's like if you're looking to buy a property in Kansas City and you're from Boston and you fly out to Kansas City for an extended weekend, and you stay in a local hotel, and you talk to local investors, and you kick the tires around the shop. Let's say you're buying an apartment building. You talk to some tenants, you talk to some vendors, and then you start to feel comfortable. Okay, well, I can make a substantial investment in this area. But what you don't know is that the local employer who employs 5,000 people down the street, they're relocating to Seattle. Or that the property that you're looking to buy has historically had a horrific track record in the community and has been prone to drug addicts and drug sales and prostitution and everything else. Those type of things you'll know if you're local. And if you're just flying in for an extended weekend you're making a major investment on a property based on 3 or 4 days or even a week, it's very difficult to make good decisions, good, sound decisions if you don't know the local community and you don't know the history of properties in the areas.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent advice. Now, there's a quote in your book I really liked. Let me read it to you, it's real short. You said, times have changed, financing has changed, real estate has changed, therefore your strategy for investing must change. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, back in the heyday, you know, the say 2000 through say even, you know, 2006, during the bubble, people were buying income producing properties based on pro forma. So not what the property was generating today, but what they expected it to be generating tomorrow. So, you know, higher rents, lower vacancy levels, just, you know, just better times, right? Always better times. Mm-hmm. Next year was even going to be better than this year. And the subsequent year was even going to be better. And on top of that, they were buying with a lot of leverage because they felt as if, well, you know, banks were lending on 90, 95, even 100% LTVs. Why not take all the money because the property is going to be worth more tomorrow? Well, you know, that's no longer the case, you know, and we know that. You know, buying on pro formas is something of the past. You buy on current existing in-place net operating income based on, you know, the rents that you're getting today, based on what vacancy levels you expect for next year, and it might not be better, it might be worse. So you need to have realistic projections, first of all, right, when you're running your numbers.
Yeah.
The other thing is that leverage. Leverage has killed so many people. You know, the days of 100% loans and no equity in the deal, that's something of the past. And all the investors that I know, including myself, you know, we put money down and we're conservative investors even during the boom and continue to pay off mortgages. You know, you didn't get yourself into any exotic loans that would get you into trouble in the future. And those people who are more conservative in their financing are actually doing well and continue to buy right now. And I encourage anyone who's a buyer just either getting into the game or they're already in the game and they want to expand their portfolios, you know, continue to pay down your mortgages. You're going to see that once those mortgages are paid off, that those properties will cash flow tremendously. That's when you really unlock the potential of a property, is when you no longer have to deal with debt service. And eventually, if you're prudent with your financing, you pay those mortgages down, maybe you pay them in advance, you're going to see a tremendous return. And so the new economy is a new time. It's new financing parameters. You know, you're going to have to come to the table with 20 or 30% down as opposed to nothing or 5% down. In some cases, 20% down. Even during the boom, you're gonna have to come down with. You're gonna have to come to the market to come to the closing table with more money. And in addition to that, you're gonna have to be reasonable with regard to your pro formas on your properties, what it'll generate next year and the following year. When you create a business plan for your property prior to purchasing it, you're gonna have to be realistic with how much NOI that property can produce, based on the rent economics for your local area and based on what's going on in the current market. So mm-hmm. It's certainly a different time that we're investing. It's not as easy as before, but also the beauty about it is that there's a lot less competition, right? So people are selling because they're desperate. Lots of short sale opportunities exist because people overpaid and overlevered. So you might be able to get a good deal from the bank and or from the owner. They're tougher times, but in more challenging times like today, there's more opportunity to buy and provide value to a property and increase that NOI over a period of time. And just to finish this out, a lot of people were investing in during the boom and doing sort of these quick flips. You know, they buy an apartment building or they buy a house or, you know, they buy an office building or a shopping center, and they quickly, you know, throw some lipstick on the pig and then sell it for a substantial gain. Well, you know, that's really not occurring anymore. So you have to have longer term thinking in the new economy. You know, it's not going to be 12 months and you make $1 million. It's going to be 3, 4, 5 years and maybe you make that. But we have to just go in with being cognizant of market conditions, being cognizant of the fact that it's not a quick flip, that it's longer term strategies with more money down.
Excellent. And you mentioned something that reminded me of probably my favorite quote in your book. And I think you've mentioned this in your other books too. You said, you make money when you buy.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is just, it's a very short statement, but it's so profound when you're investing in real estate that, you know, and what you're saying, and I hope you can elaborate on that some, is, you know, why is it so important to have that the approach of going into your investing thinking, I make money when I buy the property?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. The, you know, to have a lot of success in real estate investing, you've got to spend a lot of time on the buy side. You know, you've got to make sure that you're getting the best possible price because, you know, if you overpay, that can certainly kill you and kill the deal. But if you get a really good deal and you get the absolute bottom price that you can get based on the market conditions and your ability to negotiate, then that's really going to make a difference in the long run because that debt service is for the most part your biggest expense. And if you can get that down, if you can get that purchase price down and therefore you reduce your debt service, it goes right to your bottom line. And the more profitable you are, or more profitable the property is, the less distress you're going to have through the good times and through the bad times. So that's why I always emphasize the buy side. You know, you've got to do your due diligence. You've got to know what value is. You've got to understand your rents and the local market, and all of those things. If you really know your area and you know your market and you perform a thorough due diligence, you'll be able to determine what value is. And if you know what value is, then you'll be able to determine what is a good price for those properties that you acquire. So I always emphasize on the buy side, you make your money there, or you lose your shirt there. So you know, don't rush into any deals. Know what a property is worth, and spend time in determining what that sweet spot is in terms of what you're willing to pay for it.
Yeah, excellent. And you mentioned that with pro formas that you don't use pro forma estimates. It sounds like that ties into what you were just saying, mm-hmm. that you've got to do your own due diligence.
Right, right. Well, you know, you certainly don't use the pro formas of the brokers if there's a broker involved in the deal, or the pro formas of the property owners. You know, you want to use your own pro forma. You want to have a business plan before you get into any property. So you want to know at what number can you get into the property, what those costs are going to be in year one, and then, you know, pro forma that out for a couple of years so that you haven't, at least you've thought about how the property will perform. You've established some goals. But more often than not, that, you know, the broker's pro formas or the owner's pro formas, they're way out of line with reality. So you want to make sure that when you get those numbers, that you don't wholeheartedly agree with them, and that you question them, and you question those numbers, and then you create your own pro forma based on numbers that you believe how the property will perform.
That makes sense. So. What about people with no money? Because in the new economy, you talked about how it's harder to get financing. Mm-hmm. And most people that are involved in this understand that the, you know, credit market has changed.
Right.
So, you know, where a few years ago you could go get a loan with nothing down or 5% down,
right.
What can somebody do that doesn't have enough capital or money to get started? How could they get started?
That's an excellent question. I'm sure a lot of individuals in your audience are asking the same question. Well, you know, it's certainly more difficult now. In the new economy, you do need to come to the table, the closing table, with some of your own cash. And if you don't have it yourself, then you've got to borrow it from friends. You've got to maybe find an equity investor who's interested in you putting in the sweat and them putting in the cash. Maybe you find the perfect property, then you market it to all your friends and family and raise the capital that way. Maybe you get owner financing. Maybe you find a property where the owner has got a lot of equity in the property and doesn't necessarily want the cash but wants more of a, you know, give a loan out to you. Well, you know, you technically own and run the property, and there's some type of balloon payment in the future. You just have to be more creative these days. And I have a chapter is dedicated in my new book, How to Make Money in Real Estate in the New Economy. It's dedicated to it's sort of just that, where you've got to. It's chapter 20, creating a cash cow in order to buy real estate. And I give a couple of examples of people who wanted to get in the real estate business, but they didn't have the money. So they created another business that eventually generated the cash. So they took that cash to invest it in real estate. And although their initial business provided them with a good revenue stream, the real estate really provided them with a passive income stream that allowed them to retire at an early age. And so, you know, my message to anyone who doesn't necessarily have the cash on hand, or, you know, doesn't have a multimillion-dollar trust from the trust fund from their parents, is that, yeah, and this new economy, you do have to have some money. But it doesn't mean that you can't go to friends and family. You can't go to colleagues that you know who want to invest in real estate, but might not have the expertise or the time to do it, and might team partner with you to do this. Or you look for ideally you look for properties in which the owners will perhaps they'll consider a joint venture with you, or they'll consider a loan. In which it's owner finance. So, my message to you is that you just have to be more creative in this market. The opportunities
right.
exist. You might not have the money, but you've got to find the money to get into these deals. So this is certainly the time to buy.
Yeah, and I remember reading in your book, you give some really good ideas on how to go raise that capital or the cash cow is what you refer to it.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody listening that wants some ideas on that, definitely pick up the book and go look at those ideas. It's really good. So I have another question about what I'm wondering is there an example of somebody you know who's been successful in the new economy? Now, you've been successful in it,
mm-hmm.
But you probably know people who have been successful that you can kind of outline. You know, here's this person, here's kind of the story of what they did so that
right.
it can help our listeners visualize, you know, maybe what they could do as well.
Right, right. All right, so, you know, in the book I probably have, I don't know, 20 or more interviews of people.
Like case studies.
Case studies mm-hmm. of people who, basically what I did with each one is I talk about what they did what they did during the boom, what they did when the market, quote-unquote, collapsed, and then what they did afterwards. They have lots of examples, sprinkled throughout the book that encompass interviews with people outside of my own empirical experiences that I share with everyone so that they can relate to them. And, you know, everything from the office market to the residential market to the multifamily market, retail, all commercial properties. But maybe one of the most important messages I have here is in Chapter 7. I talk about reinventing yourself in the new economy. And whether this is something that you do periodically or it's something that you're forced to do because of a market collapse, whatever you were doing in the past during the boom, it's probably not going to work now, right?
Right.
Just not going
right.
to work. So what you have to do is you have to recognize that. You have to recognize a shift in the market, and you have to reinvent yourself in some way. So, for instance, for me, I was buying multifamily apartment buildings back a decade ago in Boston, and then I was buying them in the Midwest, large apartment complexes. And then I came down to Miami, 7 years ago or so, and 6 years ago, and I tried to do the same thing. I tried to buy apartment buildings, just basically duplicate the success I had up north down in Florida. And I was starting looking in 2005. And that was obviously the apex of the boom. I couldn't find anything. I looked at over 200 properties for 2 years, couldn't find a thing because the numbers just didn't pencil out. It was
right. And you were really doing your homework to look at that many properties and make sure you knew what you were doing.
Well, absolutely. That goes back to farm areas. You've got to know your area inside and out, and you just can't spend a weekend trying to figure out a new market and then buying based on limited knowledge. So I knew I'd have to see a lot of properties. But anyway, so I spent 2 years just not doing any deals. For a guy that was doing lots and lots of deals, I couldn't do anything for 2 years, and it became very frustrated. So we kind of changed our philosophy and the business model, and we started focusing, instead of multifamily, we started focusing on retail, and we developed a very successful company on the retail front down here in Miami, doing a lot of brokerage deals, and then working with private equity firms and buying distressed properties in Southern Florida. So that's my own example of shifting gears, reinventing ourselves, realizing that what we had done in the past wasn't going to work now, and then doing something completely new. But let me give you an example of someone else. For instance, there's a gentleman that I talk about in the book. He's a man in his 60s who grew up in France, came to the United States when he was 19 years old, and dirt poor, didn't have a dime in his pocket. And mm-hmm. he worked and started, you know, he worked three jobs. And eventually, after a couple of years being in the States, he ended up buying a building on Newbury Street, which is a very fashionable retail district in Boston. And after that, he bought another property. And meanwhile, he had, you know, he was just working a lot of jobs and living very parsimoniously, sucking away the money and then paying off his mortgages as early as he could. And his rule was, you know, I'll only buy a property with 50% LTV. So if he bought a property for $1 million, he had to have $500,000 in cash to put down. And that's been his goal today. He's got all his properties paid off, right? Doesn't owe a dime on any of them right now. His goal was to retire by the age of 50. He was able to do that by the age of 40. And today he continues to look at deals and buy properties with the same mentality, which is, even if it's a good deal, I'll only put 50% down. And he's continuing to buy both mm-hmm. retail and multifamily, and doing extremely well. And he said to me, this is one of the best times to be buying. Certainly one of the best mm-hmm. times to be buying in a very, very long time. And it hasn't been a good time to buy, certainly since 2000, when prices just, you had a compressed cap rate environment, and prices were escalating dramatically. And he realized that there was going to be a bubble. So he hasn't bought anything during the boom, and now he's back in the market buying.
Right, and that's such an inspirational story, because what I get from that is that, you know, regardless of what the market's doing, you can be conservative and follow the correct principles that really last throughout, you know, good markets and bad markets. And then you're going to be safe and protected. So where he's making sure he doesn't over-leverage, he's been able to, you know, pay off the mortgages on a lot of his property, so he's in a great, you know, position of cash on the cash flow. What I'm hoping that people hear when they listen to this interview in my audience is that stick to the conservative principles of real estate investing and you're going to be fine. And then the other message that I'm hearing you say is that this is a wonderful time to get going on your real estate investing.
Absolutely. I have no doubt that, you know, 2, 3, 4 years from now that cap rates will be compressed even further and prices will certainly go up. And in fact, when you look at the markets in general, and I break down in my book, I break down different market segments. I talk about specifically office. I talk specifically about, you know, residential. I talk specifically about multifamily and retail. The first market that's going to rebound, and it's rebounding already, is multifamily, and for a multitude of reasons. I think it's going to be one of the best runs we're going to see in multifamily. When I say multifamily, I'm talking about apartment buildings. We're going to have a great 7-year run. It's going to be landlords will be in control. Rents will go up. Concessions will go down. Vacancies will go down. It's going to be a very nice run for the next 7 years. I'm very bullish on multifamily. So if you're looking at market segments and you're trying to time this thing as best you can, I would be getting into multifamily with both feet in. And there are a number of reasons for that. First and foremost, you know, the population of the United States continues to grow. You've got positive immigration. Second of all, people who lost their homes to foreclosure, you know, what options do they have now? You know, they're going back.
Right, they're looking for apartments and rentals now.
You've got the children of the baby boomers, which is 80 million strong, it's Generation Y. They're either going into college or they're graduating from college. That's a lot of people who will be renting apartments over the next, you know, 10, 15 years. And then you have the lack of supply. There really hasn't been anything being built in the U.S. in terms of new apartment buildings over the last 2 years. It's going to take another couple of years to get new products off the ground. So you've got limited supply. You've got strong demand. It's going to be a very good time to be in the multifamily market. You've got the Latino market, which is growing by leaps and bounds here in the United States. They tend to be renters for multiple generations. You know, you've got people who perhaps they were renters in the boom, they were renters, and then they decided to buy. Well, they can no longer buy because it's taking too much money to do that, and the credit markets are so restrictive that they're unable to get those loans. So that's impeded the progress of many people who wanted to buy and sort of kept them in the rental pool. And eventually, you know, the economy will improve. We're seeing signs of that. 2011, 2012, 2013 should be better years. The economy should grow. GDP should grow, and eventually, you know, this jobless recovery should be a job full recovery over time. Right. But for all those reasons that I've mentioned, multifamily is certainly the place to be over the next 7 years.
Well, and that's wonderful perspective, and I appreciate you sharing that. Let me end the interview with reading one more quote from your book. And the reason I like this quote is it's just so optimistic, and I think powerful on its message. You said, "Every successful person I know has one trait in common. Each is utterly consumed by positive thinking, and they all are supremely optimistic individuals. They take absolutely nothing for granted. They don't assume that the world owes them great wealth, fame, or success. Life is not fair, so they set their expectations accordingly." Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. That's actually one of my favorite parts of the book, and it's at the end of the book. I think it's chapter 22, Economic Recovery, or it's in the conclusion. I think it's in the conclusion. You know, it took me a year to write this book. And I was thinking about, you know, how do I end this book? What's the best way to end it? Should I be talking about certain real estate strategies? Should we be ending it with a story from the front lines? Should I be ending it with an interesting quote? And I really decided, you know what? People need to understand what it's going to take to be successful in this field, and it's not easy, you know, and it's not for everyone. But for those of you who either, you know, maybe you want to leave your 9-to-5 day job, you want to create a passive income stream for yourself, you want more flexibility to spend with friends and family, you want a better life for yourself, you know, real estate is certainly the best way of doing that, best way I know of doing that, creating a passive income stream so that it frees you from the shackles of a 9-to-5 job that you may or may not like. Or, it complements what you're currently doing so you have additional income. But with that comes a great deal of patience and perseverance that's required to see things through. It's not, you know, it's not the internet boom anymore. You can't make money overnight. You need to be patient and you need to persevere during the tough times, especially when you're learning the industry. And so nothing comes easy is my message. You know, you need to fight hard for everything that you want in life. And although you might look across the street and you might see your neighbor as being very successful, well, I'm sure it hasn't come easy for them as well. They have their own story to tell. And no matter what you do, any great accomplishment in life requires a lot of hard work. And that's how I wanted to end the book. And I'm glad that you that message resonated with you.
Yeah, it really did. It was a great. I think you made a really good choice on how you ended the book there. And so, in summary, I want to say, you know, thank you, Matthew, for taking the time to talk to me about your thoughts and perspectives on this, you know, investing in this new economy. You've been very successful at what you've done. I think you have a lot to offer people. Definitely, I encourage everybody listening to pick up a copy of the book, How to Make Money in Real Estate in the New Economy. And do you have any last words that you'd like to share with people
if anyone's interested in learning more about me or contacting me after they've read the book, I try to field all of the emails that are sent to me, questions about what they're doing, or just, you know, if they want to comment on the books, they can reach me via my website, Matthew, MATTHEWA, letter A, Martinez, MARTINEZ.com. So that's MatthewAMartinez.com, and just go to the contact us page to send a note to me.
And do that. Excellent. Excellent, Matthew. Thank you again so much. It was so great meeting
Thank
with
you,
you and
you.
Getting to know Bye. You. I appreciate that.
Likewise.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.